Hello, movie fans. I'm Lily Percy, and I'll be your guide this week as I talk with my friend and co-host of the podcast, Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, Casper Ter Kuile, about the movie that changed his life, You've Got Mail. If you've seen You've Got Mail, then you know what to expect, and you'll be in for a treat. But if you haven't, don't worry about it, as we're going to give you all of the details that you need to be just as excited about this conversation as we are.
Dreams are nothing more than wishes, and a wish is just a dream you wish to come true.
I resisted watching You've Got Mail for many, many years. I'm a big romantic comedy fan, so it's not because of the romance in it or the fact that Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan are the main principal actors, because that's a huge sell for me. But I resisted it because it was a remake of the original Shop Around the Corner with Jimmy Stewart. And I just never thought they would be able to do justice to a movie that was so much about unrequited love and the idea of falling for someone that you shouldn't love, that is the complete opposite of you, and then, quite frankly, is almost like your arch nemesis in some ways. But when I finally watched You've Got Mail in a moment of weakness, I fell in love with it.
Once I read a story about a butterfly in the subway, and today I saw one. It got on at 42nd and off at 59th, where I assume it was going to Bloomingdale's to buy a hat that will turn out to be a mistake, as almost all hats are.
Listen to this. Every night, a truck pulls up to my neighborhood bagel place and pumps about a ton of flour into underground tanks. And then the air is filled with white dust, which never seems to land. Why is that?
I fell in love with all the ideas behind this New York that doesn't exist. This nostalgic, warm fall, Christmassy New York, where everything is beautiful and people say hello to each other on the street and everyone seems to know each other. And I fell in love with the idea of falling in love, which is really what this movie is about, even if you find that love on the internet.
Is it infidelity if you're involved with someone on email?
Have you had sex?
No, of course not. I don't even know him.
I mean cyber sex.
No.
Well, no, don't do it. Because the minute you do, they lose all respect for you.
Mm. Well, it's not like that. We just email. It's really nothing. On top of which, I am definitely thinking about stopping because it's getting
out of hand.
Confusing. But not because it's nothing.
So You've Got Mail is about two people. Joe, played by Tom Hanks, and Kathleen, played by Meg Ryan, who meet online, the early days of the AOL chat room. They know that they both love books. They know that they both live in New York, and that's about it. They don't know anything else about each other. And through the back and forth emails that they send each other, they fall in love. They're vulnerable with each other. They're able to share everything that they don't share with even the significant others in their own life, with the people in their own lives. They're able to really confess to each other in a way that only the internet and the anonymity of the internet can provide.
Do you ever feel you become the worst version of yourself? That a Pandora's box of all the secret, hateful parts, your arrogance, your spite, your condescension, has sprung open? Someone provokes you, and instead of just smiling and moving on, you zing them. Hello, it's Mr. Nasty. I'm sure you have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, I know what you mean, and I'm completely jealous. What happens to me when I'm provoked is that I get tongue-tied. My mind goes blank. Then I spend all night tossing and turning, trying to figure out what I should have said.
So as much as I've become a huge convert to You've Got Mail and a huge fan of it, I'm nowhere near as big a fan of it as my dear friend Casper Ter Kuile. I first met Casper a few years ago, and in one of our early hangouts, he revealed to me his love for You've Got Mail, and I just knew that it was a movie that he had to talk about with me. It's a movie that changed his life profoundly and ultimately even foreshadowed the way that he looked at love. So, you know, I'm going to transport you to a little place right now, I hope. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this, but Mr. Rogers, when he, you know Mr. Rogers, I know you're not American.
I do.
You do
I
know
have
Mr.
learned
Rogers.
About it, yes. Okay. Yeah.
You learned about Mr. Fred Rogers. Yes. When he was accepting his Lifetime Achievement Award at the Daytime Emmys, he did this amazing thing as part of his acceptance speech where he asked everyone in the room to take 10 seconds and think about all of the people that brought them to where they were at that moment. Mm. And I'm not going to ask you to do that. You can do that mentally while I'm talking. Okay. But what I am going to ask you to do is to think back to the first time that you watched You've Got Mail. And think about the way you felt, where you were, you know, how old you were, all of those things. And just kind of go back to that time when you first saw it. And I'll just look at the clock and I'll chime in when the 10 seconds are up.
Okay. Thank you.
So what memories came up for you when you were thinking about You've Got Mail and that first time you saw it?
I think I saw it when I was maybe 14, and I was a little 14-year-old queer kid in a boys' boarding house at a very kind of fancy English school, and I felt so alone. Like, I was so disconnected from the rest of the students, and I don't know, like, I was bad at the things you were supposed to be good at. And I remember watching You've Got Mail, and, I mean, first of all, obviously, it takes place in Manhattan.
It's a
magical New York place,
doesn't
right?
exist, by the way. It's a New York that you're nostalgic
don't
for.
Don't ruin the illusion.
I know.
But it was this dream of another place where people have, like, conversations about literature, and they, you know, go on fancy dates, and they live on a boat because they've left their, girlfriend or whatever it is. And it just everything seemed shiny and beautiful, and it was full, and there were parks and fairs. And, you know, it just seemed like this kind of adult world that I didn't yet have access to that I longed for. That's what I remember of kind of longing for not only their lifestyle, but also love that you could find as an adult, which I definitely wasn't finding as a 14-year-old.
I love that you mentioned longing, because that's the thing that came through for me last night when I was watching it again for like the 30th time, was how much this movie captures that feeling of longing. Perfectly, what it feels to long for something, and not just love, but just longing in general, just to be longing. And I think about you as a 14-year-old and how that clearly came through to you.
Oh my God, Lily, it was so much worse. You know, there's this scene where Kathleen Kelly, is played by Meg Ryan, kind of writes a missive to this man that she met in this chat room. She doesn't even know really who he is. And she says at some point, like, you know, I just wanted to write this down. So good night, dear void. You know, even if it's just going to the void. Good night, dear void. And I remember, like, I wrote that in my diary to myself. I really thought I was that kind of person.
God.
Just like you have so many feelings. And like, where is it all going? And I think that's what I love about this movie is, yes, it's a love story, but they don't meet until the very last scene of the movie. The story is really about an idea of someone. And, you know, I met my husband online, so, you know, there's an echo in my own life here. But there is the story and the love that builds inside both of these characters is one of longing and a really projection onto the unknown of what might be. And I'm someone who always lives kind of in the future. I love to think about future plans. And I think this movie is so much about that it's, you get to create perfection in your mind before it even happens.
Sometimes I wonder about my life. I lead a small life. Well, valuable, but small. And sometimes I wonder, do I do it because I like it? Or because I haven't been brave? So much of what I see reminds me of something I read in a book, when shouldn't it be the other way around? I don't really want an answer. I just want to send this cosmic question out into the void. So, good night, dear void.
And there's something about the written word and the anonymity that they both had, not knowing who each other was, that allowed them to really just be so honest and vulnerable and write something like what you were talking about. And also just, it almost felt like confession when I was watching it yesterday. It's like they're continuously confessing to each other.
Well, especially because they share the worst parts of themselves, right? Like, you know, there's this kind of zinger moment when Kathleen finally gets to say, you know, you're nothing but a suit to this man who's crushed her business. And suddenly she sees herself in a whole different way. And she's like, I don't want to be that person. And I think we all do that, whether it's suddenly being very mean or we have the perfect insult or we judge someone in some way. And it's funny or it works well or we get what we wanted from that moment. But afterwards, we feel that kind of icky feeling of embarrassment and shame. And I love that that's so central to their relationship is being completely honest about who they are with each other. There is no pretense.
And the way that they write to each other, it allows them to write so romantically in a way that it felt almost like I was reading an Austen novel. It's no coincidence that she's reading Pride and Prejudice all throughout the movie. I wanted to just read a couple of the things that they say to each other and just how poetic they are. Joe, early on in one of the exchanges, he writes,
"Don't you love New York in the fall? It makes me want to buy school supplies.
I would send you a bouquet of newly sharpened pencils if I knew your name and address." I mean, what man would say that to a woman in real life? I mean, seriously, it's amazing that he's able to say this.
On the other hand, this not knowing has its charms.
It's a swoon. And then Kathleen, you know, played by Meg Ryan, I should say Joe is played by Tom Hanks, she writes,
"What will NY152 say today, I wonder? I turn on my computer. I wait impatiently as it connects. I go online and my breath catches in my chest until I hear three little words.
You've got mail. I hear
my
nothing.
My skin is tingling. Yeah. I hear
I
nothing. Nothing
Not even
but the
sound
of
on the streets of New York. Just a beat of my own heart. I have mail from you.
From you.
When you read it out loud, it sounds kind of cheesy, but oh my God, it's so poetic.
Just wait for the Cranberry soundtrack to kick in underneath.
Yes,
oh, it's so
yes.
great. And it's the perfect full movie because you see there's pumpkins and there's this idealized sense of time and the seasons as well. And then Christmas comes and she's decorating the tree and, you know, Joni Mitchell's playing. And I don't know. It's just such an evocative. And it's so funny. Like, that's something that I think is really underrated about this movie. There are
it
some
really is.
Hilarious lines.
Great, like, one-liners.
Oh, my God. I'm going to the nut shop where it's fun. or Tom Hanks's girlfriend, played by Parker Posey, is this kind of horrific publishing world character, and she finds out that someone who she doesn't like has died, and she says, "Ugh, that's one less person I'm not talking to."
Yeah. I love
so
when he
brutal.
Describes her, Patricia. He's like, "Patricia's amazing. Patricia makes coffee nervous."
And then the
so
scene
good.
where Joe realizes he has to end the relationship with her. They get stuck in an elevator with the elevator attendant and a, you know, fabulously wealthy woman with like a little dog and a big fur coat or something. And the woman starts by saying, you know, "If I ever get out of this elevator, I'm going to speak to my mama again." And then the elevator attendant says, you know, "If I ever get out of this elevator, I'm going to marry Orit." Yeah. I don't know what's been stopping me. And then
cue Patricia.
Yeah, Patricia's like, "If I ever get out of this elevator, I'm having my eyes lasered," which already like says,
and that's
okay.
When Joe looks at her and is like, mm-hmm.
It's like, and then he starts to say,
"If I ever get out of here,
where are my Tic Tacs?" What?
It's just like, yeah, get out of this relationship, right? The moment when it's clear that the love has gone. You know, I think we've all had this moment where I remember I brought a boyfriend home who was actually my boss, and he was a lot older than me, and a wonderful man in many
Naughty.
Ways.
Naughty. Love it.
Very bad. And I brought him home to meet my parents, and the moment my mother opened the front door, I suddenly looked through her eyes at our relationship, and I was like, what am I doing? Like, no way do I need to be with this person. And so I love the kind of illustration of both the bringing together in love, but also the moment when you're like, I need to get out.
Yeah, you know? We all need to be aware of the where are my Tic Tacs moment.
Exactly.
I came home tonight and got into the elevator to go to my apartment. An hour later, I got out of the elevator and Brinkley and I moved out. Suddenly, everything had become clear. It's a long story, full of the personal details we avoid so carefully. Let me just say, there was a man sitting in the elevator with me who knew exactly what he wanted, and I found myself wishing I were as lucky as he.
So I love that you talked about how the fact that you met your husband online, and I wonder if, you know, especially rewatching this movie, if there are lessons that you've carried into your relationship, lessons about love that this movie has taught you.
I think the thing that it really taught me was that the person that we think we want to fall in love with is often the very opposite of the person who we should really fall in love with, right? in so many ways, these two characters are ill-suited for each other. They have different values about their work. They end up in real conflict around their work, especially. And I remember I thought I wanted some, like, big, hunky, rugby-playing kind of guy. Mm. And the man who I ended up meeting online and falling in love with and marrying was a musician, a classical musician who sang opera and who loves aesthetic things of beauty and creates, you know, everything he makes is beautiful, whether it's laying the dining table, cooking a dish or singing, you know, a concert. And I never thought that's what I really wanted. And I don't know, I think there's something in that of the thing that maybe will make us most happy is the thing we least expect to fall in love with.
Hmm. And then maybe it happens in your body before it even happens in your mind. Like you can't even intellectualize it or understand it. And you have to really trust that.
Yeah, that's what she says. Three little words. I've got mail from you, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like she feels it in anticipation. Yeah, before she's really able to explain it. And even when he stood her up, you know, she's like, it's not rational to continue a conversation with that person when they've done something that has, you know, has hurt you in that way. But I don't know, there's this powerful connection there, which she's willing to trust and try again. I love that.
I hope you have a good reason for not being there last night. You don't seem like the kind of person that would do something like that. The odd thing about this form of communication is that you're more likely to talk about nothing than something. But I just want to say that all this nothing has meant more to me than so many somethings. So thanks.
So how has this movie changed for you as you've gotten older, as you've continued to rewatch it? And I mean, now I'm in my mid-30s and watching this, I was like, oh, this is the age that Meg Ryan is in this movie. She's in her 30s, and they never specifically say what age. But it's kind of amazing when you watch a movie through time to see, like, when you catch up to the age of the characters. So I'm just curious as to how it's changed for you when you watch it now at your current age versus when you were 14.
Well, I'm very specific about how I watch it. I'm not allowed to watch it with anyone else because, like, I don't want them to, like, dilute or like poison the experience.
Or even comment at all sarcastically about anything.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, this is a sacred thing. Like, this is just for me. And I watch it with a pint of Haagen-Dazs ice cream by myself. And I really don't just watch it flippantly. Like, I will very specifically, I'm like, is it this? And it's often like, is it this bad that I need You've Got Mail? Yes, it is. Okay. And like, I'll create the ritual time and space for it. And I think the things that, you know, there's some smaller things that have changed. Like, I live in America now, so I understand some of the references much more easily. Mm. I just get more of what's going on. But every time I watch it, there's something new.
It's so funny because the one thing I noticed that I had never noticed yesterday watching it was so the very famous last scene where we hear Joe tell shop girl, don't cry. And Kathleen says, I wanted it to be you. I wanted it to be you so badly. And, you know, we're crying as we're watching the scene.
Right.
They're getting attacked by the dog.
Like, yes, the dog
the
is dog humping
is
them.
Literally humping him. And I thought, this is Nora Ephron. Just this is a key thing to her, is that always that lightness and humor amidst everything. Even in this romantic, poignant moment, she's like, okay, let's let the dog hump Tom Hanks.
Exactly. Brinkley. Yes. And I mean, Nora Ephron really is a genius. Like this, I just think is just fabulous writing.
And her sister Delia, who she wrote it with. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You know what? That's funny that you mentioned that because it feels so, the love between them actually nearly doesn't feel romantic. It nearly feels familial to me.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah.
You know what? It's not an erotic love. It's not, and none of the relationships in the film are really about sex or about intimacy in that way. And I think that their writing as two sisters really infuses the whole plot. Like, it feels like you're in on the jokes all the time because it has that familial sense.
Well, and I realize now, I never had this realization before you just said this, that I think she was also instructing us, teaching us all the many forms love takes, right?
Yes.
And not just in this romantic, sexual way, but in all the ways that we can find it in our lives.
And I think that's such a solid foundation. I think so many marriages are about, you go through a phase of passion, but you know, things that really sustain a lot of relationships are a deep, deep friendship. And that's what they build during that time when they're writing to each other, is that foundation. And, you know, hopefully they get it on after the camera pans out. But
and hopefully not with the dog there.
Oh, absolutely.
Like a fool, I went and stayed too long. I'm wondering if your love's still strong. Ooh, baby, your hands are sealed, delivered, I'm yours.
Casper Terkile is the co-host of the totally addictive podcast, Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, where they talk about the magic of that book, chapter by chapter, and explore what it can teach us about our own lives. And we're also excited that he's going to be joining the On Being Project's new Impact Lab this spring. Next time on This Movie Changed Me, we're going to be talking about the beautiful movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. If you want to check that out before our conversation, you've got 2 weeks, and you can find it streaming on Amazon Video, iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Vudu. Just remember to bring a box of tissues, and chocolate would also be a good idea. This Movie Changed Me is produced by Maya Terrell, Chris Hegel, Marie Sambalay, and Tony Liu, and is an On Being Studios production. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you have time, please leave us a review, because that actually really matters. I'm Lily Percy. Do yourself a favor and go watch a Tom Hanks movie.